So real change happens when you have consistency in your routine, and that starts with Vegamore's hair care. I cannot even tell you, I love Vegamore. I've been using it since I had a hair fallout after I had my babies. Both times I had hair fallout, and the second time I was lucky enough to start trying Vegamore products. Their Grow Serum is so popular, they sell a new bottle every 15 seconds. So elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. For a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/vulnerable and use code VULNERABLE at checkout. That's VEGAMOUR.com/vulnerable. Code VULNERABLE to save 20% on your first order. VEGAMOUR.com/vulnerable. Code VULNERABLE. I just had the most amazing birthday party. And let me tell you, I had mocktails, many, many mocktails. I had beer, champagne, and wine, of course. And I gotta tell you, there are a lot of wine lovers in my friend group, which made me think about First Leaf. Now, First Leaf, I feel like, even for folks that don't drink, is a great gift for those who love wine responsibly, of course. And as a First Leaf member, you can discover new wines that you will enjoy. They have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So they will curate wines after you take a little test about, you know, your palate, what you like, or what your friends might like. If you notice that, you know, I noticed a lot of my friends were drinking red wine. And best of all, with First Leaf, people can choose when they want their deliveries. So it's extremely convenient, and that's cheaper than getting it at the store. So join the club today and discover new wines you'll love with First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/vulnerable to get your first box. That's tryfirstleaf.com/vulnerable. tryfirstleaf.com/vulnerable.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, hey, everybody. I am going to do a solo episode today because I am turning 40. I'm turning 40 years old. That is really weird to verbalize. And the closer I get to it, the weirder it becomes. I don't know why I didn't think of it earlier this year. And it's descended into a cold, hard fact that it's coming for me, as it comes for us all, hopefully, in good health and all that. It's actually a privilege to age. I will recognize that. But of course, there's lots of feelings that come with it. I'm also very grateful to be in active therapy. I've gone back to therapy, and I think that I'll be leaning on that in conversations coming up to my party, which will be a ton of fun. A lot of work, but it's going to be, I love throwing parties. And I always do them really big. So the 40th is one of those parties. I feel like I've been talking to other friends and they're like, you know, 40 is one of the last big birthday parties you can throw yourself without you being like truly approaching senior citizen age. That's terrifying, first of all, to think of a decade that goes by as fast as the years start to go by when you get into your later 30s. But it's true. I think that 40 is almost like a true, like saying goodbye to any youth that you might have had in your quote unquote 30s, so to speak. Because I think like people are like, oh yeah, in my 20s, I was like, you know, just screwing around, making mistakes, in and out of relationships, da da da. My 30s was I really was growing and I was doing all these things. But when you're in your 40s, it's more about like perspective and like what have you already learned? Because at this point, if you haven't learned it, it's a character flaw, if you know what I mean. Like if you're still binge drinking in your 40s, chances are you're going to end up having problems with your health, like in a meaningful, impactful way. It's not just a hangover at that point. And so I don't know. It's really kind of been, my, a lot of themes have been shifting in my mind. I'm not the only person approaching 40. I feel like there's definitely a ton of friends of mine that are just turning 40 now. I feel like there's going to start being more and more birthday parties in the next couple years. And folks that, you know, listen to me, a lot of them have come up to me in the past and said, you know, you're my childhood and you were like a big sister to me. And so I guess I wanted to kind of do a solo episode that was meaningful to me and hopefully meaningful to those who are listening to it about what it means to be, you know, turning 40. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode of Vulnerable. It's kind of painful. So what have I learned in 40 years of my life? I would say that in approaching this, I've isolated a couple different tidbits, takeaways, if you will. And obviously, the first one is that time is finite. Yeah, that's a, when I read that on my notes, it's kind of like very bleak. The second one that's like right after that is like half my life is gone. I'm sorry, I have to laugh. But really though, this is the bigger concept. When you are in your 20s, and obviously when you're a child, I have two children, and I watch what it's like for them to have no concept of spatial awareness, or when they're babies, they don't have object permanence. They don't understand that something is there for a period of time right in front of their face. Like it takes them, that's one of the first milestones is object permanence. And so now that my girls are, you know, in the elementary school age, it's wild to see them miss me when I go out of town to go to work in, you know, California and do these podcasts. And so I try to relate to them, but it's very hard when you are this like parent and this older parent trying to understand the way that they see time. And I think a lot of us as millennial parents have been trying to like communicate with kids instead of time and our lack of understanding of it as a barrier. We try to speak with feelings. So like when I try to talk to my kids about them missing me, and it probably feels like a very long time to them that I'm gone, you know, because I'll be gone for like 3-4 days at a time. And it's like, how are you feeling about that, right? That's the workaround as a parent is like, let's connect about how your coping skills are to get through that hard period of time. I think that's because so many of us weren't taught how to cope and understand our feelings in like a really intimate way. I think so many of the folks that I know who are millennials approaching 40 are trying to cycle break. Cycle breaking is where, you know, your parents did it a certain way and their parents did it a certain way, but you're going to stop, you know, the alcoholism that runs in your family or the mental or physical abuse. So many people in the millennial generation are doing just that. And it's fantastic to see that. So basically back to growing up and coping skills, which I had very little of. I'm going to be very, very transparent with you. That's something that I wish that I hadn't spent so much time finding. I'll go back to this. Because time is finite. And if you're able to understand that at an early age, you are so far like beyond anyone else that you think might have it together, or you think has the answers, or you think is really strong. They may not. But if you focus on yourself and say, okay, let me work on myself early. You know, like my kid has access to a therapist, a family therapist, if she should need it. And there's been times when I've checked in with myself and said, oh, you know, is this an overwhelming moment for my daughter? Like, should I bring her into the family therapist, who's also my therapist, and she's lovely? And should we kind of all kind of keep those lines of communication open so that we can sort of thrive together, you know? And I think sometimes I'm like, am I projecting the fact that my daughter doesn't have, I don't want to push her into therapy, so to speak. But again, I know that I have not as strong of an understanding of coping skills. So I just want to give that to her in as quickly as possible, because I don't want her to waste time with either one of them. Actually, there's two. I don't want them to waste time in bad relationships, lacking confidence, doing things that they don't want to do, feeling like they don't have a voice. All of those things can be mitigated by understanding your mental health at an early age. So I guess that's the first tidbit. Yeah, and the other thing about this whole time being finite thing is, think about it this way. So my husband has a really great mathematical way of speaking about this, but when you're younger, you have lived less of a fraction of your life. So time feels a lot longer. But when you're approaching 40, and also 40, the years start to go by faster and faster, and you don't even realize it, especially as a parent, until you're like, wait a minute, it's Christmas already? And that, I feel like, is because you've lived more of your life, and time becomes a lot shorter, which is a little scary. But I think that it's also a gift, because if you start to recognize how fast time can go, your time becomes more valuable. And you start to, I think, almost say, fuck it more. I don't need this. And I'm only going to spend time where I need to grow and doing what I want and what I need to do. So I think that's why when women say, when I turned 40, I became so confident, and I became, there's a lot of positives to, quote unquote, turning 40. And I think that might be what it is kind of like starting to have more inner confidence.
So real change happens when you have consistency in your routine. And that starts with Vegamore's hair care. I cannot even tell you, I love Vegamore. I've been using it since I had a hair fallout after I had my babies. Both times I had hair fallout, and the second time I was lucky enough to start trying Vegamore products. Their Grow Serum is so popular, they sell a new bottle every 15 seconds. Vegamore products are 100%, that's right, 100% cruelty-free, and they are never, ever formulated with potential harmful chemicals like parabens or hormones. And when it comes to seeing like real results in your hair, you want to make sure that you are consistent. So when it comes to ordering, you can either choose to get one bottle, you can choose to get three bottles so that you never run out of that serum. And after those three bottles, after those 3 months, I swear your hair will be looking more radiant, fuller, thicker. You're going to love the way it looks. So elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. For a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/vulnerable and use code VULNERABLE at checkout. That's VEGAMOUR.com/vulnerable. Code VULNERABLE to save 20% on your first order. VEGAMOUR.com/vulnerable. Code VULNERABLE. I just had the most amazing birthday party. And let me tell you, I had mocktails, many, many mocktails. I had beer, champagne, and wine, of course. And I gotta tell you, there are a lot of wine lovers in my friend group, which made me think about First Leaf. Now, First Leaf, I feel like, even for folks that don't drink, is a great gift for those who love wine responsibly, of course. And as a First Leaf member, you can discover new wines that you will enjoy. They have a 100% satisfaction guarantee. So they will curate wines after you take a little test about, you know, your palate, what you like, or what your friends might like. If you notice that, you know, I noticed a lot of my friends were drinking red wine. And best of all, with First Leaf, people can choose when they want their deliveries. So it's extremely convenient, and that's cheaper than getting it at the store. As a member, people can get access to incredibly helpful wine concierge. So if you want some wine pairing advice because you know you're going to be throwing an event or a party quite like mine, it's really great to know that you're on the right track with that shipment. And what's more, with a membership, you get membership exclusive pricing. So join the club today and discover new wines you'll love with First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/vulnerable to get your first box. That's tryfirstleaf.com/vulnerable. Tryfirstleaf.com/vulnerable.
Okay, so my next one, I think, is a two-parter. Another takeaway. Like yourself. Did you see how I breathed through that one? Like yourself. You have to like yourself. I have spent 40 years hating on myself. Almost 40 years. I truly wanted to fix everything about myself. I thought everything was bad at one point or another. My weight, my face, my nose, my talent, my friends, my this, my family, my career, right? Like, you name it. I've probably hated on it. I mean, let's keep going. My personality, my voice, my social standing, my finances, my education, my intellect, like any little thing I've hated on at one point or another. And that really takes a toll, like on your confidence and on your self-esteem and like how you view yourself. It's kind of hard to preach, like, you know, empowerment, female empowerment specifically for my brand, while you can't even look in the mirror and say, you know, you're okay. Literally, just like baseline, you're okay. You know, that takes a lot of work to be able to say that you like yourself. I think our brains are hardwired. I think my therapist would say, like, you know, we're all like very much in the fight or flight response. And so critical thinking is really hardwired in us so that we know what's wrong and how to protect ourselves from it. But so many of us get stuck in that pattern of critical thought, and it's used against ourselves over time. It's this really strange, almost like sadistic relationship that you have with yourself. And I would encourage you to work on that, because I am. And anything that I have started to work on, like currently, because I am approaching 40, I'm trying to be like, you know, kind of like vulnerable with this episode and saying that, like, I know I have stuff to work on. I've never said that I'm, you know, a perfect person by any means. In fact, that's why Vulnerable even got started, was so that I could kind of not be by myself sharing this stuff anymore, like when I did on YouTube, and kind of find community in the intricacies of mental health and the journey of that. So liking yourself is really hard. It takes a lot of habits. Like my therapist was saying, like, look in the mirror, Christy, every day and say three nice things about yourself when you start your day. And I've been doing it. But truly, have you ever locked eyes with yourself in the mirror? It's weird. It's like looking at someone during sex. It's awkward. Like, really locking eyes is so intimate. You know, we put makeup on or we straighten our hair. And yet we're not looking in our eyes. And so I kind of said to her as well in our last session, it's so funny that, like, you know, personally, my whole life has been spent performing for other people, but not actually looking at myself in the mirror and like speaking to myself and like kind of performing, reciting something to myself. It's kind of ironic. But yeah, I'm actively working on liking myself. Because I think if you really did like yourself, like, some of what we've been talking about is kind of coming through it and saying, what does healed Christy look like? You know? I used to say that a part of me was trying to get back to Ren Stevens, which was a character I played back in the day, who was extremely type A, but also extremely wholesome, big-hearted, loved her family, had her shit together, you know. And there was a part of me in that character at 16 years old that felt very untouched and hopeful and very likable. She was a very likable character. She was written as such. And so there was this like part in my mind that kind of always felt like I needed to get back to that untouched place. And you, the truth is you can't ever go back. You can maybe tap into parts of yourself that existed, but I think it's mostly as long as it's not a pining for what was, whether, you know, you have access to it like I do in digital form to like actually view myself, which is very cringy. I have a really hard time watching my reruns and taking it seriously. But, you know, I think there's a lot that can be sort of appreciated about maybe there was a time in your life where you actually did like yourself. But I'm coming through this part of my life and I think I'm ready to like myself. You know, I'm ready to give myself permission to be okay. Because I'm tired. I'm really tired. I've always been tired. But I think like realizing that I'm turning 40 and this whole like very crystal clear awareness of time and its impending end. As bleak as that sounds, I don't want this to come off bleak. I just want you guys to know that this is something that you may end up feeling at some point if you haven't already and can relate to this. Okay, so the next little tidbit is to love yourself. That's something that I would have loved to have done earlier. And I say love yourself versus like yourself because I feel like liking yourself is one thing and loving yourself is actually taking care of yourself, feeding your soul, doing things that are hard sometimes, setting boundaries for yourself. Like for me, it was my sobriety. And that was the first boundary that I have ever set for myself. And it sucks at times. Really sucks around the holidays because it's a really stressful time for a lot of people. But the last few years, so many moving parts, there's anniversaries and tons of volunteer work and tons of little things that I even do to myself. And the holidays are a big, big trigger for a lot of people. But being sober is something that you work on day by day. And then in running with our theme of time, you look back and you say, wow, I've been sober. I feel like almost, let's see, my daughter turned 7 plus 9 months, give or take, like eight years. You know what I mean? And so it's like the day-to-day ends up becoming the weeks, months, and years. And they go fast. But the choices that you make day-to-day still remain super important. To be sort of like, you know why you're doing them. Which leads me kind of to having a relationship with your higher power, right? I wish I would have had an actual decent relationship with my higher power early on. I had this really strange relationship with what I thought was a higher power. I don't even know what it was. Hear me out, okay? Please don't think I'm weird. I had a higher power that I thought I'd negotiate booking roles with. I swear to God. So like when I was a little girl, I think I was about like 12 or 13 and I'd been acting for, you know, since I was like 6 and a half. All I wanted to do was get into movies and TV. And like, I thought that I wanted to book more stuff and then that, you know, for some reason, I thought that would fix everything. Like my parents would fight less and they would be proud of me and I'd be happier. And so I distinctly remember being in Connecticut in my little bed in our house and sort of talking to God. I was raised Catholic, so we prayed before bed a lot. And as I got older, I would just pray by myself. I wouldn't have my parents kind of like watching me pray on the side of my bed, kind of teaching me how to pray. But I would pray a lot because, I don't know, I had a lot of anxiety, I think, looking back. I, for some reason, thought my house was haunted. I don't know if that's true or not, whatever you want to believe. But I we lived in a creepy Connecticut house, and going to bed sometimes was scary. I think I was afraid of the dark for a long time. And so I'd pray as a means to kind of feel like I wasn't alone. And so I feel like a higher power was almost like parental at times because, you know, my parents weren't exactly focused on feelings. I think they were more focused on four kids, you know, them making our mortgage payments, and they had a whole bunch of stuff. I don't think we talked about feelings that much like I'm doing with my kids. So I would talk to this higher power. And unfortunately, as I got deeper into like the competitiveness and the expectations and me going into Manhattan every day, which was like an hour and a half each way, it felt like I was grasping at a relationship with a higher power. And that, like, that voice became very negative. And I would start trying to strike deals with that. I'd say, okay, if I don't do this, this, and this a certain way, or if I don't like fantasize, because I'm a kid going through puberty. So I was like, if I don't fantasize or try to watch Skinamax, can I like, if I'm a good girl, can I just like get, can I get a movie? Can I get a TV show? Can I get something? And then eventually I would do something, like a win. I'd get a minor win. And I would be like, oh, this is because I did this. So I started having magical thinking in this way. And I think I remember reading Jeanette McCurdy's book where she talked to, I think she thought she was talking to the Holy Spirit. She was raised Mormon. And it became sort of like an OCD thing where her higher power would tell her to like do certain things several times. And I really related to Jeanette's book in that way. So if you guys haven't read that book, I still highly suggest it. But yeah, I mean, magical thinking, I think, really impeded my ability to understand what a higher power could be. And so I have come full circle with finally seeing what it could, the benefits of talking to somebody in a metaphysical way, a philosophical way, and trying to just hear the positive, like, guidance coming from, like, tapping into that as a meditative practice. And so I'm still working on this. I don't do yoga. I don't work out. I don't actually have really healthy habits right now, but I am working towards and acknowledging that these are things that need to happen. I'm in some ways, by me having this conversation, I'm like recommitting to myself and to this higher power that is currently observing and hopefully not judging too harshly. So yeah, I think truly being honest with yourself and saying, okay, if I had someone that could check in with me, like spiritually, if I could have some sort of a force that I could talk to and say, hey, like, I'm going to give this up to God. That's another saying that they say in recovery, giving an issue up to God. What is that moment telling me? What, if I'm truly present in this moment, what is the next right decision to make? And 9 times out of 10, if you're asking it in that very open and present space, this isn't even like witchy woo-woo or even that religious. It's just like you will get some sort of an answer, even if it's just your subconscious telling you, hey, this is obviously the next right thing for you. The sooner someone can get in touch with that as a habit, the better. And again, I certainly want to teach my kids how to do this. So I'm actively going to make this happen so that I can show them and role model it for them as well. Unlearn bad habits. But yeah, unlearning bad habits is, I think, a part of all of this, if you're not getting the through line of this. And it takes time to unlearn bad habits. So like, in order for me to say, okay, yeah, I want to do all these things, but then to actually like take accountability and like say, and like do it, show up for myself and therefore everyone around me, kind of have to unlearn bad habits, kind of have to do it. You have to shit or get off the pot at some point. Let's see. Okay, I like this one. Remember the good and leave the bad. And by leaving the bad, I mean truly, truly, truly learn from it and talk about it. And then talk about it so much that you can come to terms with it in a meaningful way, not in a gossipy way. So like, for example, I had two really, really bad breakups in my lifetime. I probably had a couple more, but there was two really significant ones where I was actually engaged to other people and they just fell apart really badly. And I was not emotionally capable of either A, having those relationships, and B, certainly not breaking away from them. And they took me years to recover from, years. And I never truly was able to walk away from them and stop talking about them until recently, which I think is really great. Something shocked me into being into the present moment recently, and it put a lot of stuff in perspective for me. And I'm really grateful for some of the challenges that I face as an independent creator. We have no outside financing for Podco. My husband and I are truly mom and pop here. We have sponsors and we have a tremendous, you know, staff and support team, but it's really been very grassroots. And so yes, I'm very grateful for certain challenges that happen when you're sort of a grassroots content creator, who's also a working parent, and you're somebody who's kind of picked yourself up from a space that wasn't very financially fruitful to trying to turn the tide for you and your family. And a lot of that ends up becoming very like confusing. When you're sort of like starting to create a company, which I think lots of other people can relate to that. When you're creating a company, that's like your baby, that's your everything. And so you get really caught up in the minutia of it and what people have to say about it. But at the end of the day, if you truly believe in it and it's something that serves you and it serves a certain community, I think that you can be really, truly proud of it. So I actually am very proud of what Podco's done and how it's consistently on the charts with any one of our podcasts. And where it's going to go, I'm like very confident in how we're going to grow. But again, it's still a very mom and pop like operation. Mom and pop being me and my husband, Brendan Rooney. So something that has come up with, you know, people talking about me on the internet or something, it's hurtful, but it's really shocked me into understanding that the present moment and the people that are directly in my circle matter most. And so, yeah, I think it's important to kind of be grateful for when the opportunity to change is presented before you. Because if you try to dodge it, and if you try to self-medicate or, you know, do any bad coping mechanism, even like look into it more, right? Because there's only so much that you can control about how people perceive you. So I think that staying present is truly going to help me understand what it means to walk away from the past. Closure was something that I struggled with in my 20s big time. Like I said, I had these two really bad breakups. And now I wish everybody well because of just how insufferable that whole experience must have been for them and for myself. And it's one of those things where then you turn 40 and you're like, my libido slowed down, you know, like when you're like in your youth, especially when you're a youth coming out of being a child actor with a very repressed, you know, sexual identity kind of thing. Like, I feel like I was so ready to like share like my experiences with everyone and try to date as many people as possible and just like leech off of other people's energies. It was not a good time. And so I think that closure, right, has to be self-appointed. I've not been able to make amends with people that I have directly harmed, especially while I was actively drinking, because I'd like to. I'd absolutely like to. I'd like to write letters and try to contact folks, but like that's really not helping them. And that's another thing like in recovery that I remember them saying, again, I don't actively work my 12 steps, and maybe I should. Maybe that's something I'll do in my 40th year. But I went to a hell of a lot of Al-Anon before I realized I was the problem. I went to a hell of a lot of Al-Anon, which works the 12 steps. And so because I went to a hell of a lot of Al-Anon, I know a lot of what the mantras are and what the sayings are. I even know what the steps are. And so like in being in recovery for 8 years, I've employed a lot of those mantras, even if it was subconsciously, or when I've tried to tap into my higher power, some of those mantras like creeped in. And so, I mean, it's sound advice. That's the thing, right? Like when you're younger, you're like, oh, sound advice, fuck it. I don't want to hear it. But you get old enough to you're like, you know what? I'm going to take value from every conversation that I choose to have because A, you're only keeping company with people that you think are, you know, good enough to be around you. I'm not saying on a transactional sense. I'm saying like you're not going to actively put yourself in environments that aren't good for you, right? So if I have a conversation with my husband and we start to fight, one of our superpowers is that we actually look at each other and realize that we don't have time, energy to fight. We need to get to the other side of that conversation and we both need to feel heard and we both need to take away like the deeper meaning of the conversation. So that I think is a superpower that's helped us heal from a lot of things. And again, put closure on those conversations in a way that's meaningful for all. But the self-appointed closure, the not being able to make amends to people, when I was in my 20s, I wanted revenge really, really badly. And now I'm realizing that all anybody could possibly want is peace. Peace for myself, peace for those who I may have hurt or who hurt me. And that's kind of just where it stands. That's where the energy dies after you say that. And for so long, I heard people like say, just forgive. Forgiveness is so much more empowering. And I was like, yeah, but it's not so much about the big F. Being raised Catholic, forgiveness meant just forgive and don't talk about it. Just forgive in the name of, you know, Christ and be that best person. And it kind of, I don't know, it was role modeled to me by my mom, to be honest, to be walked all, like, all over. She was a little bit walked all over and didn't really find her voice until now. My mom is 76, and I've seen her become so much more happy in her spirit. You know, she's dating somebody, and it's like, it is really beautiful to see her being her own woman in a lot of ways. So anyway, closure is really something that I think you can be in constant conversation with, but ultimately it's something that you have to bring yourself. And I fought that for a really, really, really long time. You will never regret doing the right thing and not drinking. Like, I don't care if you are an alcoholic or not. You're probably not if you're listening. But you will never regret not drinking. You will never regret not doing that specifically or doing the thing that you know you should not be doing. You will never regret that. It sounds weird to say that because I remember in my 20s, that wasn't even an option. Like, I had absolutely no impulse control. And I would so hope that I could raise my kids to understand what impulse control is. There's a certain amount of mistakes I think that you do have to make, of course. Like, that's just part of this creative process of autonomy and living your life. But I think failing upwards would be fantastic, don't you? Like, I think I'm finally failing upwards, and I want to continue doing that. So much of not, you know, having closure makes you live in the past. And so I feel like I've lived in the past for a long time, right? Until recently when I was just like, holy shit, time's ticking. louder and louder and louder. Living in the present is sort of, like I said, it's like going to be a habit you have to create for yourself, whether it's through meditation. I know my husband does that, and he does a fantastic job of kind of training himself to live in the present moment. And he's been helping me too. So I'm really grateful to have a partner that guides me through that. But there's plenty of resources online everybody can look into. But meditation and talk therapy, I think, are, I really poo-pooed them for so many years. And I finally have caved and said, okay, like, these are means for me to find some answers for myself. And I'm going to keep pulling that string. If that thread is loose, I'm going to keep pulling it. And I kind of wish I would have taken it more seriously sooner. But I think I had a pretty low opinion of myself. And I think, like, all of these things are intertwined. So living in the future is, it's hard. Of course, like, if I put my past at rest and I'm managing it and I'm understanding what that relationship looks like to it, and the present feels uncomfortable, but at least I can use meditation or talk therapy to get through that. It's the future part that's actually really scary. You can't really project where you're going to be. I think that you can just have a really optimistic point of view. And I think that's what's going to benefit you the most, personally, is if you choose optimism. I have been cynical my whole life. I've had, traditionally, a pretty negative worldview. And that's been informed by, you know, years of being a child actor, laborer, whatever you want to call it, and sort of feeling like I had to shed that for a while and forgive whatever that means, forgive that. But then also just like feeling like my 20s was this sort of like cynical, like entitlement. I was entitled to these answers. Rather than seeking them out, working on myself on the inside, I was entitled to the world fixing my problems. That's not true. You're not owed anything. I've had to hear that by different people at different times that were probably angels, but it hurt every single time I heard it. And now I've finally accepted it. And if you're listening to this by this point, you've sat through the diatribe of my wisdom. This message is for you. You're supposed to hear this, is that the world does not owe you explanations, opportunities, closure, anything like that. You have to create that for yourself by being, I would say resilient, but it's more like being proactive. If you can be optimistic, please do. Please, if you can continue to believe in magic, I would say that's one of my favorite coping mechanisms. If I'm learning to like myself, is that I actually really do love to go to Disneyland, even though, you know, I've worked for the company and sometimes it's triggering to go to Disneyland. It can be really triggering for me. But when I go, I can still believe in like the magic of what it offers my family, myself. I believe in magic in all things. In fact, my daughter came to me, she's just turned 7, and she told me that one of the little girls in her grade doesn't believe in magic. And she told me this in like full like conspiracy mode. She's like, "Mama, you will never believe. So-and-so does not believe in magic." But I told her that she has to. And I was like, "Well, honey, like everyone's going to have their own way of seeing the world. But I want you to believe in magic and I want you to know that magic exists." Now, eventually, you know, my daughter's going to watch this in the future potentially, and or I'm going to have a conversation with her about certain things that don't exist in the ways that she sees them, right? And it's going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt her, probably. But what the takeaway will be is that magic can look and feel like many different things, and that it can live in you and inform all of the beautiful things that you can do with your life. So personally, I'm going to stay believing in magic without the magical thinking part. And I think that's going to help me become more optimistic. Because being like a cynical person for that many decades, and then saying to yourself, okay, not only am I going to forgive the past, but I'm going to start looking at this time that I have left on earth with softer, kinder eyes. It's probably the best gift that I could give myself on my 40th birthday. So that's it. I think I've hit you guys over the head with all of this crazy wisdom from this crazy old lady with gray hair. But I encourage you to just take care of yourself. And 'cause at the end of the day, this is your life and only your life. You may share it with some really wonderful, magical people. And you may give birth to those wonderful, magical people. You may be married to those wonderful, magical people. But at the end of the day, this is your life. This is your limited amount of time on this earth, this floating rock. And I know that sounds crazy, but I do wish you well. And I wish you well through this process. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Vulnerable.